Royalton tonight. Woo! Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Airplane Mode. I am your crew member, Chantel Francis, with my crew member, Victoria. How are you doing today, Victoria?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Tired.
Me too.
Tired. It is hard to get up the next day after a flight, especially because we tend to do the long ones. We might have explained this before, but we do tend to do long flights on the weekends so that we have the rest of our week pretty much free, correct?
Right. Yeah. Sometimes, and then it sometimes turns out to be back to back, right? Two long days of flying.
Yeah, which is, can be pretty exhausting. And do you find that a lot of times people are like, okay, so are you guys going back out again? And we're just like, we've already been at this for 14 hours. Like, what do you want from us? What do you want from us?
I know. It's surprising how many people ask that question. Like, is that it for you today?
Yes. It's like, yeah. No. like the shortest day is still like 10 hours.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing like a short Cuba flight, it's still about 10 hours of your day without travel time.
Yeah, exactly. No,
with travel time, maybe. Like on the return end.
Exactly, right? Like, so I'm always like, no, that's it for today. Like 14, 15 hours.
That's something that people don't really realize is that like, maybe because like a lot of other airlines, they do lots of little hops. And so, like, they'll hop over to Ottawa, and then they'll hop over to Quebec City. And, like, you know, so they'll just do a bunch of hops in a day. But those flights are, like, 45 minutes or an hour. And our flights are, like, our two flights yesterday going down was, what, was five what? Five it something.
Was, yeah, 5:05 was it yesterday?
And then coming home, it was 5:31, right?
Yeah.
Long. And that's not with being downstation, cleaning the plane. That's not arriving early for the plane, like to start our checks and stuff. And it's not with everybody deplaning and going through customs. And like, it's without all that. It was already almost 11 hours. So,
right.
It's you there and back if we're doing a turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that I find that part like so hard too, is like, it's not just like getting, like, we have so many things to get to the aircraft. Do you know, like on our way there, we have to like, well, I know you take an Uber or come on the train too, right? Or in the subway, like even for you, it's like a 1 hour commute to work. But then once you get there, it's like, take a bus, do this, pass customs on our way back. That's that's the hardest part for me on a long day. I'm like, oh, just get me home.
Oh, and yesterday was very frustrating for me because I took an Uber home after. So I kind of left a little bit quickly because like we were waiting for one crew member and the kiosk was not working, so they had to go see an actual teller, but then there was a bit of a line. And so we have like a one crew concept, and now it's, we still kind of hold it, and so we were waiting and it was taking a long time, and I'm like, well, I'm not even going with you guys to the parking garage. And so like I kind of decided to leave. And it's really frustrating because at Pearson, the Ubers, there's a pickup zone. It's one certain place downstairs in arrivals, and there's another pickup zone upstairs in departures. And it's very specific spots, but downstairs, sometimes they go upstairs to pick up the fare. And so, like, I see them, they're there, and I'm like, where are you? And they're like, I'm in front of the Sheraton. And I'm like, no, you have to go downstairs to arrivals at this exact number. And it's like, it says it's fine on my end, but upstairs they're getting a different address. And so I had to wait for him to go all the way around again. So it says it was going to be here in 3 minutes. It was there in 12 and then come down. And then it was on the wrong side. It wasn't on like the pickup side. I was like, I just want to go home. I'm so tired.
I know, right? And so, you know, this morning I woke up and I went to get my charger for my phone or whatever out of my crew bag. And then it just came flying out. And then it kind of like woke me up is our gift card.
And so it just,
oh yeah, I forgot we got this yesterday.
So we've been making some posts on social media with like, we're flight attendants. Of course, we like receiving gifts from passengers. And because we are also master manifestors, we think that we have been manifesting even more gifts from passengers. Because honestly, since we started talking, I've received gifts from passengers on every single flight.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking that too. We know that, right? Like absolutely. How energy works. The more we talk about it, the more it comes in.
Well, why don't you explain it? Why you think it's working?
Oh yeah, the more gratitude, like even just like the slightest like gratitude towards a gift, and it's like you'll attract, like it just, you welcome more of it in.
So with gratitude and manifestation, it's an energetic thing. And so like attracts like. And so I always kind of reference it to if you play a D string on a guitar and you bring another guitar that you haven't touched and it has a D string on it, the D string will start vibrating because like attracts like. And as soon as it's in the range of energy, it'll also start vibrating. And so that's kind of like with us. So what we are vibrating now is like being so happy and grateful and excited about receiving gifts from passengers. And we're vibrating that energy. And so the gifts from passenger energy is matching it. And we're getting gift cards.
So I love fun. It.
Yeah. And like the fact that it was given to me as well, you know, because like I was in the working in the back and I went out in the aisle and I was just doing, I think I was grabbing a seatbelt extension or something like that. And he's like, oh, hold on one second. And he gets out of his seat, goes into his bag, and he reaches in and grabs us one for each of us. So I was like, thank you. And we'll be taking them back next week. I said, most of us will be here next week. So maybe we'll get something back from him.
I love it. And you know what I found yesterday too? I think I said that to you. It's not even just like, oh, we just want gifts. I just love like, I mean, of course, like it's so nice. I'm so grateful. I love just how nice the people. We had really great passengers who were just so both ways. They were so thankful. Thank you so much for everything. Like, I don't know. I just love that. Like even that in itself is so, I'm grateful for.
And I think it's also because our flight manager is like the nicest person on the planet. She makes really, really nice announcements. She really, I feel, makes the passengers feel special. And like, she introduces everybody and she's like, talk about how thankful and grateful and happy that we were to have them on board. And I think it really puts everybody in a really good mood. And I think she sets the tone really, really well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
She's the best. And so we'll be with her again next week. We didn't really have a chance to get any stories from our manager, but I was thinking of sharing some stories that I had because I was working a layover this past week. And okay, so some of you might know I do a lot of things, right? I work as a hypnotherapist. I work as a tarot card reader. I do astrology. I work as an actor. And so me and my best friend, we have this, it's kind of a joke that there's this algorithm and it's also energy, but we call it the algorithm that whenever we go on a vacation or we do something that it's going to be very difficult to be accessible, that's when you'll have the most auditions or you'll book a role. So I leave on this pairing, so this multi-day trip to London, Ontario, where we're just operating out of London for a few days. And I know to bring my ring light, okay? I know to bring my ring light and a camera stand. I brought it this time and my iPad because I got 4 auditions that I needed to execute during these 4 turns that I'm doing or 3 turns that I'm doing out of London. So it was very challenging, we'll say, that I'm like operating a flight and come back and then setting up. And like at 2 a.m., I'm doing an audition in like this little alcove in like my hotel room. So that was my experience. I got them all done, which was surprising, but it was really, really challenging to get it, to make it all happen with getting a reader and all that stuff. Funny enough, one of the auditions was for May Day. So Mayday is a television show. It's kind of like a reenactment show about different plane tragedies that have happened. And so they kind of document a story that might have happened with maybe a crash or a failure of some sort, and how the crew responds. And so I was actually playing an air traffic controller for one of them. So I was like talking about like, which was, it was really funny. And I was going to get my captain to record the lines for me so I could just do the audition, but it didn't work out. So I was like, I just got my brother to do it with me. But I was like, look at that. I'm an air traffic controller in this. And so I know what they sound like, at least. I'm like, oh, Tacoma 139, 195, right turn, like winds are coming in strong. Like, I was like, small world. Like, you know, you got the right person for that one, even though I've never been an air traffic controller. But
still, you're in the industry. Yeah, that would be
perfect. Definitely in the industry, and understand how to sound like an air traffic controller, you know?
Yeah.
So while I was there, though, we were doing, so the first day we were doing a turn to Punta Cana. Second day was Varadero. Second day was Cayacoco. Third day was Varadero. So Varadero is Cuba. And I don't tend to do any Cuba turns out of Toronto, just because, like we mentioned before, the commute is a little bit long. And so I want to maximize the amount of hours that I'm working every time I come to the airport. So I don't tend to do the shorter flights. But I do the shorter flights, obviously, if I'm on a layover. So this, we already gone down and we're coming back. We boarded the plane and it wasn't a completely full plane. There was about, I don't know, 30 extra seats. And this couple comes and sits all the way at the back row. We have like 32 Echo Foxtrot. And so the couple sits there. They'd asked for a seatbelt extension. So I'd gone all the way to the front to grab a seatbelt extension and came to the back, gave it to one of the passengers. Then we were pretty fast boarding. Then we're trying to, we close up our doors and was that what happened? I'm sure the timing, but like we close up our doors. We were going to go do the safety demo, but there's two people in the lab. And so we're waiting for people that are in the washroom. And like, people always seem to want to get on board and leave us smelly gifts right when they get to the, I'm like, you're in an airport, like leave your gifts in those gifts. We don't want those gifts in the lab. Okay. Anything that smells unsavory, we would prefer you to leave in the terminal or in your hotel room or in your own home. But people tend to want to come onto the plane and they're just ready to go. So these people were taking a long time in the lab. And so I'd already gone out to my position to do the safety demo. And we were waiting. Finally, two people come out of the lab, sit down. We start doing the safety demo. And at Varadero, we kind of, I believe it's a short runway, so we start moving pretty quickly while we're starting the safety demo. But we hadn't started moving yet. So we started the first few steps of the safety demo, and then we were asked to return back to our door positions. We're like, oh my goodness, like what's going on here? Like, why are we returning to door position? Sometimes it just could mean that the door on the outside wasn't closed properly or something like that. But everybody has to open their door if one person opens the door. Everybody has to arm their door if one person disarms their door. Everybody has to arm the door if everybody. It all has to be the same. So we go back to our door positions, disarm our doors, and these two Cuban officials like storm down the aisle, like so serious face. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And like, it looks like they're looking, coming directly to me, because I was standing in the back, like looking down the aisle, and they're just walking all the way down and they go, Chantal. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And then they go and they talk to that couple that was sitting down that had asked for the seatbelt extension, and the other, I guess her name is, I don't know, left the gift in the lab that we were waiting on. And they called them and they're like, and they said like the other person's name, and they're like, come with me. And we're like, oh my goodness, like what is happening here? And so they get up and they got their full name, get up. They're like, take all your stuff with you. And they took all their stuff with them and they exit the plane. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, am I seeing something, like witnessing some sort of crazy story? It wasn't a crazy story. They were on the wrong flight. They were supposed to be going to Quebec City. But it was so dramatic. And like when we went back to the door position, like everybody was chattering. They're like, oh my God. Cause our cabin manager, she was like, yeah, so they're supposed to be going to Quebec City, not London. And so everybody's like, oh. And like normally we would have found that out before we left if it was a full flight, but it just so happens that those seats were empty and that was their seats. And so nobody noticed that they were on the wrong plane, except for the fact that they had a French accent. But a lot of people traveling anywhere could have a French accent. So we're in Canada. So we didn't notice it right away. So yes, were on the wrong flight. And I'm like, the scare for me, I'm like, oh my God, did I do something? Like, what the hell? Because I thought they were saying me and they're walking towards me.
That's so funny. What a coincidence. And I was going to say, I think like Cuba, they're so like hardcore security, you know, like keeping people in the country, like making sure everything's so proper. Like I was actually talking to another flight attendant about how in Cuba, and she's like, oh my gosh. She's like, I never noticed that. But now that she started, like when she started to think of it, she's like, she understood. So like any time I've done a Cuba flight, have you noticed like how they have like at the end of the side of the runway, they have like a guard with his gun. And then they have another car that will follow after the aircraft when we're taking off.
Oh, no.
So I've seen that so many times, like so many like at Cuba, like Varadero, you know, wherever in Cuba that I've gone. So they're like hardcore, like to make sure that nobody's going to jump into into the wheels, you know?
I've not noticed that, but I will notice now.
Yeah, look for it. It's still there. When I was there like a while ago, I saw them and I'm like, yeah, they're still making sure everything's like no one's going to escape.
I get it because wasn't there stories? I don't know if I'm making this up or it's a rumor, but that people would try to get into the cargo hold to like get out.
Yeah. And into the landing gear. Right. Yeah.
I mean, it must be pretty bad if you're going to try to do that. That sounds so dangerous.
Yeah. So maybe they thought these people were like trying to like pull a fast one on them. That's why they're like.
No, I think they're just being serious, but like they're just because the other flight couldn't probably leave. And they're probably like, okay, they've checked in, like. They got on a flight, they've disappeared, their bags are probably on the other plane, because they don't want to probably pull those bags. They're like, where are these passengers? So that's why they probably went to see if they were there. Yeah.
I love it.
Before we left, like, I don't know what would have happened if we would have taken off, right? If they would have called us back.
I wonder. Probably not. They would have let them land and then... I don't know.
Oh, and that's like what, remove their bags? Because you cannot travel with unaccompanied bags on an airplane. So I guess they would have pulled their bags from the other flight and then they would be stuck in London. Oh, I mean, it's not too far, but like that would be really annoying.
Yeah.
Because London's a pretty small airport and so is Quebec City. So it's probably not that many flights going back and forth there.
Well, it's good they got it. That's funny.
It was dramatic. What do you have any Varadero stories?
So I was just thinking, you know, like years ago, it made me think of our service that we used to have. I think that was my most wildest, like Varadero flight is like when we first started and we had like nonstop service with those TSUs. And
I don't think I was ever there for TSUs. I was there right after that.
Oh, okay. So Varadero flights.
What's a TSU?
Like the trays. And then you'd get like a little glass of wine and you'd have a meal and a dessert and a bun. So we had all these services to do on this on a Varadero. And when we first started, it was so hectic. It was you know, we already got, like, I remember one flight in particular, it was like you got cabin secure and we were still in the aisles, like trying to jam these TSUs because it was like all this garbage was on them and like you couldn't, they had to line up like perfectly. I just remember how crazy it was with that service. Now it's so laid back. We have all this time on a Cuba flight. But back then when we had those services, it was like just so hectic, especially if you were just starting.
Like, as you haven't figured out the flow yet and like, you know, timing and how to be quick at it for sure. I definitely remember my initial trainer talking about the Varadero flights, woo, because people used to get rather tipsy on those flights going to Varadero, and it was kind of like a party bus going over. I think it's tamed down a little bit, and it's probably because a lot of the Varadero flights are early morning check-ins, so like I haven't really done that many of the PM flights of the Varaderos, but yeah, they tend to be hectic already, especially on the way back, because those airports in Cuba tend to not have very many options. And so they're ravenous when they're coming back. And I've sold out of everything before coming back, like from a return flight for Cuba. Like, I've never seen people so excited to see a can of Pringles before. It's like,
just, you know, it's because all they've been like looking at is ham and cheese. When I was there on vacation a while ago and in the airport, and it was like a Kaiakoko airport, and on the board it's like ham and cheese sandwich, ham and cheese something else, ham and cheese.
So I'm like, like back in the beginning, I spent a few Christmases in Varadero. And one of the things that's really good is that they tend to have many food selections in Varadero. Like I find that the food where we've stayed anyways, like obviously there's going to be different places to stay, that like I didn't enjoy the food that much. But in Christmas time, they have lobster. And so like you could just get like a plate of lobster because it's just so like easy for them to get delicious lobsters. And so I would just like have lobster, like 5 lobsters and butter for Christmas, because like they just would bring all the lobsters up for Christmas and champagne.
Oh, nice. Were you there like on over a layover?
Yeah.
Okay.
A few times I done that, like a long time ago. Long time ago. Nice. So I remember with a past crew member, she doesn't work with us anymore, but we were sitting in the back. So I was on the L side, and we just had gone to Cuba. I think we'll just say Varadero for story's sake. And we're about to take off for the return. And so we're sitting, we've already done cabin secure. We're on the runway starting to pick up speed to take off. And this tall guy, pretty youngish, seemingly maybe a little bit drunk or like hungover, gets out of his seat and stumbles over to us and tries to like open up the lab door. And we lock the bathrooms when we're taking off. And so he's like, and he's like going to puke. He's like, I need to wash it. We're taking off. We're like, sir, sit down. Don't puke on us. We're pulling the curtain. Sir, sit down. Don't puke on us. And like, literally, we're like, it's like taking off. And like, we're screaming at this guy to sit down and not to puke on us. We finally get up into the air and we let him into the lab. And he stayed in the lab for a majority of the flight. He was very sick. Wow. I think he was hungry.
But he was able to hold it like before he... Like, he was able to, like, manage to hold it before
he did puke on us, but we were very scared. We were, like, literally, like this. Like, please. And she was, like, this way. Yeah, that was, like, it was terrifying. Like, you know how scary it is to try not to get puked on?
Yeah. Like, I can imagine.
Have you been puked on?
No. No,
I feel like people have been. I've heard stories of people like getting to the front galley and being like, and then it's like shrapnel comes out of their mouth.
I've heard a story about that too.
One that you could retell?
I don't remember it too well. I just remember, I can't even remember the details, but something like that happened to someone. Yeah. I don't know when. So many stories. Yeah. I can't remember exactly. Any more Varadero? Not much. Cuba. Like, I just remember that service. Were you there when we used to do hot towels and then the champagne? And so, and then what, you weren't there, but we had the TSUs with the wine, and it was just like, do you remember those hot towels, handing them out? And sometimes people would, like, they look like marshmallows and people would try to eat them.
I never had anybody try to eat them, but I heard that people have tried to eat them before.
Yeah. Or yeah, they'd use it for everything. They'd use it to like wipe their hands and then their face, like, and then their shoes.
Like, I like those hot towels, not going to lie. We still get them like as in our, you know, bags, but we don't have a service for them anymore.
But they used to be like these little round pucks. Like a little bit bigger.
The pucks. I've heard about the pucks, I've never seen the pucks.
Oh yeah, and then when you get them wet, they fluff up like a little marshmallow.
Okay, that reminds me of a story that I was told. I don't know if you were there when they were doing some flights to Europe.
I was, yeah.
Okay, so somebody told me this story where they were doing, I believe, a flight to Italy. I don't know if it was Toronto, Italy, or if you guys were doing turns out of Italy. Like, I don't know how it worked, but there was an Italian flight that was being had, and some of the passengers didn't speak English that well. And so this passenger comes up to the front galley and is talking to the CS, the manager, and was like going like, I had to go. If you're listening to this, I am making like a V shape and like licking between the V shape, like. And she's just like, I don't know what you want, sir. Want some water? And he's like, and so then he like, I guess she gave him a pen, and he makes like another V on a piece of paper, and he's like, and like wanting to lick the V. She's like, I don't know what's happening here. I don't know what you want. He wanted an ice cream. Apparently you guys were giving out ice creams. And so he wanted an ice cream, another ice cream. So he's like,
oh my gosh. So yeah, I was actually on mat leave for a majority of that time when they were doing ice cream. But yeah, it would melt, and I was like hearing all the stories about this.
So that's one story that I heard about ice cream. Did you hear any more?
No, I just remember it like just melting all the time. And it was like, it just was a mess. So it didn't last too long. But it's so funny.
Interesting choice. Like ice cream on the plane. Because we don't have any refrigeration. You know, a lot of people don't realize that we don't have a microwave. We don't have a fridge and freezer. Like, people are just like, oh, can you store my child's milk? And we're like, we could put it on top of the ice. That's about it. Or like, can you warm up this bottle? And we're just like, we can put it in hot water for a moment. Is it going to melt? They're like, no. We're like, okay, we can sit it in hot water, but we don't have a microwave. We have water.
Yeah. Or even when we like run out of stuff, you know, people are sometimes so surprised. What do you mean? You know, and it's like, well, we only have a limited amount of space. And like,
everybody wants a ginger ale today, you might not get that ginger ale. It's very possible. Yeah. People are definitely very surprised by the fact that we just don't have Costco amounts of everything. It's like, what? Yeah. You have no more original Pringles? Like, sorry, we got 30.
Yeah. You know what, when you were talking about Italy, it reminds me, I've never shared this with you, but it's just my daughter's principal and I were talking a few months ago, and you don't hear this, like, this is very rare that you'd hear someone experience this. And she was 8 years old traveling to Italy with her grandparents who spoke no English. And she actually, so the reason she brought this story up was because she was traveling to Antigua and it was one of her first flights because she says she doesn't like to fly. So we, like, she started to tell me her experience on this flight. So they were on their way to Italy and they got, there was, I think they blew an engine. They had, they ended up having a ditching. They had the rafts, and because she was the only one that spoke English, she was 8 years old translating this to her grandparents, telling them everything like that was happening. Like, they had the full ditching on water, and she was like, so she doesn't like to fly. But I was like, wow, I've never met someone that's like lived through that, especially at 8 years old, you know?
I knew somebody that had lived through, something like that. I can't remember. She told me the story when I was like 12, I think. But yeah, that's wild. Ditching.
Yeah. And she was like, so that traumatized her obviously at eight, right? She was like, here I am 8 years old having to explain to my grandparents what's happening, what they need to do. Like, you know,
oh my gosh, that's really, really, really scary. And so good for her. And how was she feeling after her Antigua flight?
You know what? I didn't see it. That was before summer break and I never caught up with her afterwards, but I'm pretty sure she had a great time.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Well, so working on an airline, we do get the opportunity to meet some cool people. Have you ever had any stories of people that you've met on a plane?
I think the only time was when we had that, I was telling you yesterday that we had that one lady that came on board and we're just like, she is so gorgeous, like supermodel, like she looks like a supermodel. And then when we landed, we were like Googling and we found out, I can't remember her name. This was like so many years ago, but she was one of Canada's, like, on that, what was it called?
Canada's Next Top Model, I think you said.
Yeah. And she was so nice. Like, she was talking to us. Like, so that's, we just like, that's it.
So with this channel, Reality Realness, you guys know that I am a reality TV junkie / expert, and I love talking about reality television. And so, you know, airplane mode is kind of like real life. So this is reality TV, you know, at its finest. But on board, I have had the opportunity to fly down a celebrity. But what was most recent, which was really fun, is, you know, Big Brother is one of the shows that I cover on Rob as a Podcast. And I happen to have gone to school with the host, Arissa Cox, who's now an executive producer. And so we went to a performing arts school from, you know, you audition when you're 8 years old, and then you go from your 9 through 15, and then you go to the high school after that. In the Claude Watson program. And so she's a year older than me. I was a dance major. She was an art major. And, you know, in this school, there's only 60 people per grade. So you kind of know about the lives of everybody that went to school or that you were friends with. And because there's like 10 Black children in this school, all the Black parents kind of know each other and know their children and stuff like that. So even my mom was following Arissa's career. And so, you know, I'd bump into her and she's like, oh my God, Chantel, I haven't seen you in forever. And like, what's been going on? And she's like, you know, I was really excited when I saw that she was going to be the new host of Big Brother Canada. And so Big Brother Canada started about 10 years ago, or I guess 12 years ago now, 2012, I believe. And so we've been watching her and she's a fan of Big Brother. And so we love seeing Arissa as the host. So we have a few people that we fly with that are also big fans of reality TV and Big Brother and watch Big Brother Canada. And so I guess a couple months ago now, it would probably have been in maybe November, I was just communicating with one of our crew members and he was like, I just saw Arissa Cox on the crew bus. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fun. That's fun. I wonder who she's flying with. And we had a few flights that were going out that day at around that time. And he's like, ooh, I hope she's on my flight. I'm like, ooh, we're already boarding. So I don't think that she's going to be on my flight, but who knows? So I was still in the back of the aircraft, and I hadn't gone out to close any of the bins and finish setting the cabin, getting it ready for takeoff. And one of our supervisors came on to talk to me, and she was giving me a pin because, as you know, when you get to 5 years and 10 years, you get pins for the years of service. And I'd already received my 5-year pin, but I guess they had another one for me. So she's giving me this pin and she's talking about like my service and how she, you know, it doesn't go unnoticed. It was very sweet, and we hug. And by the time we finished having this little interaction, it was, you know, we were ready to take off and arm our doors. So the supervisor leaves the place. She's like, oh, I got to get out of here. And I never had the opportunity to go out into the cabin. And so arm our doors, go to our demo positions, and this cute little baby that was beside me, and I was playing with the baby as I was waiting for the cue to start doing the demo. And I start, and this woman was like, Chantel, Chantel. I'm like, oh my gosh, Arissa is sitting right in front of me, right at my demo position. And I would have seen her if I'd gone out, but because I was distracted, my supervisor was talking to me, I didn't actually end up going out into the aisle before the flight. And so it was actually really hilarious. So like, I do the demo, I go through, I hug her, I'm like, okay, we'll talk the whole flight, and go to the back, you know, take off. And then we just like hung out the whole time. So because this was an art school that we went to, we were both in choir together. So we were like singing these choir songs in Latin. We were talking about like other people that we went to school with and what they were up to. And she's telling me a little bit about Big Brother and like, you know, that just like things that might be happening in the future. And it was just like, it was just so awesome. And our flight manager on that particular flight is also a Big Brother super fan. And so he was super excited that we happened to be able to be flying her down with her family. And what was really funny and interesting was the fact that I was like, I'm not supposed to even be on this flight. I usually don't do we were going to Jamaica. I usually don't do Jamaica flights because they're a little bit too short. On Saturdays, I usually do St. Lucia, but I had this Saturday as a gray day, and I was actually drafted to work this flight. So it wasn't ever on my schedule. It was just placed on my schedule because they needed someone to operate it. And so I told her that. She's like, well, funny you say that, because I was also not supposed to be on this flight. We were supposed to travel last January. And so it just so happens that we were both drafted to be on that flight at the same time. And you know, her being in my section, standing right in front of me, it was definitely a really cool moment. And I'll show you the photo. There we are.
I love that. So I love that. I love how everything lines up.
I love a good lineup, a good lineup. So we also wanted to highlight some, you know, a celebrity or somebody esteem that has been a flight attendant. And so you were doing some research and you found the first Black flight attendant. So do you want to talk about her a little bit?
Yeah, let me pull it up. Do you have her picture?
I do. Ruth,
yeah, so Ruth Taylor. I love this. Like I was telling you, I was looking for some vintage photos of flight attendants. And then I was like, all these women are like, it's all white women. So then I started doing some research. I'm like, and then I found that she was one of the very first Black women that was a flight attendant. So she was.
It would be great to share this with everybody because it is Black History Month, and so it's nice to place some recognition with our airline. We might have talked about this before, but there was an all-Black flight that was put together with, you know, all the front end being all Black flight crew members, and then all the aft was full of all Black. They're all women too, I believe, on this particular flight. And so, yes, so it was nice to honor somebody, a Black woman, the first in the industry. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, so she was a nurse. It says Ruth Carol Taylor, a New York City nurse, applied to be a flight attendant which was then called an airline stewardess. So she first applied with Transworld Airlines and was rejected for not meeting the airline's physical standards at the time, which basically meant it was because she was a Black woman. And then the aviation pioneer didn't give up. Instead, she filed a discrimination complaint with the New York State Commission and continued to apply to other airlines. Shortly after, she applied with Mohawk Airlines. When they announced that they would be doing a recruitment of Black flight attendants, and out of 800, which I find fascinating because now we have, we have thousands of applicants, right? Like when we have hiring, like when we're hiring. So back then they had 800 applicants and she was hired. And she was hired at 26 years old.
That's super awesome. And what I think is interesting.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to add that. Within 6 months, it says that she was actually fired for another discrimination, which was back then you couldn't be married or be pregnant. So she was let go based on for being a married woman.
Yes, I did read that about her. And what I think is interesting is that she was a nurse before, and now she's working as a flight attendant. And, you know, nowadays people don't realize what we are qualified and capable of doing and why we're really there in the air. Like, yes, of course, we want to make you have an excellent flight and, you know, be comfortable. And, you know, if you need water, we will get you water. And, you know, if you would like a glass of wine, you would get you a glass of wine. But, you know, some people really think that we're just there to serve them in the air. And the fact that she was a nurse and then she's going to be doing this job, it shows that, like, it was an esteemed position. It was considered to be something like a valuable position, not just this is severe air quotes, just serving someone, serving you in the air. And so we do get a lot of, we do a lot of training for being able to handle medicals and handle nurse type situation. Like, I would never consider myself to be a nurse, but we are considered to be a first responder, right? We do have first aid. We do talk about medical situations and how to handle them on board. And so I think it's interesting that she has a nursing background and that she was still being a flight attendant. So I'm wondering if that is also why we get that kind of training. I wonder if it's because in the beginning, a lot of nurses went into the air. I'm curious.
Yeah, that was actually when I was looking for information on her, I came across that too, that the very first even white woman that was applying for a flight attendant, she was a nurse. And so it said other airlines started to consider, like, that's one of the standards that they were looking for, is that these women are nurses that they were hiring.
And so I think that's really cool. Like, that's probably why we do a lot of medical training, is that, like, because it started off with, like, these women being capable to be a nurse in the air, which is really, really useful. It can be.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely can save lives. Anything else you'd like to say about this lovely lady? Oh, actually, what's sad is that she has recently passed away. She was 91 years old. I didn't pull up the picture there, but this is a picture of her. She passed away last May, at 91. She looks so young here, so youthful.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's not.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But she looks great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that spotlight. That was really nice.
We love her.
Do you have any other stories you want to share? Is that it for today?
Maybe that's, unless you want to go over, like, where we can do that another time, just about grooming standards.
How about you present it?
Yeah, just how much that hasn't changed. Like, you know, like, with, like, hair and nails and, like, height. Well, now they don't weigh you, but back in the day, and I remember Emirates, like, even when I went for an interview with Emirates about 15 years ago, it was like, they weigh you, they check your, they measure your height, you know, all this kind of stuff. Other than probably weight, the height, do they still do that? But nails, like I know grooming, like for our nails, like we can only have a certain color. They can only be a certain length.
I think for height, you have to do a reach test. I don't know if it's like standard for every airline, but I mean, it is to be able to get into the overhead compartments. If you're, if you can't reach that, it's you're not really fully able to do your job. So I understand like the reach test being important, but yes, I definitely knew back in the day that physique and height and the way you looked was very, very important for airline consideration. And I did have some friends that worked for Emirates who they had to reapply their same red lipstick like every 15 minutes or whatever to make sure that it was always perfect. And like their grooming standard was always like upheld.
And I also heard that they still do have their very own makeup line that you have to use.
Oh, really? I'll find out about that. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about their very own makeup line. Well, I guess that's it today. Just a few short and quick stories. What do you have going on that you want to maybe share with the people?
Not much. Not much. You mean like, not much.
How about the Instagram?
Oh, our Instagram page. Yeah. Like if follow us on Instagram, Airplane Mode FA. Watch our. Perfect. Yeah. And on TikTok, I'm not on TikTok as much, but yeah, we're on Instagram.
Perfect. And so if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this channel as well, Reality Realness with 3 S's. Ring the bell so then you will know when we go live, because I know we're going live a little bit earlier today because I'm going to be talking about Love Island right after this. So please subscribe and ring the bell. Like this video. Let us know in the comments of any stories that you've experienced, or if you have a tale to tell, or if you've had an experience maybe applying for an airline. Any airline stories are more than welcome, and we'll see you again next week to talk about them. Thanks, everybody.